Welcome to the free stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com. Brought to you by Bill Curry Ford. I am Bobby Fenton. This is the week 13 edition. How fast the season has gone by. And here we are as we get set for another week of Buccaneer football. They'll take on the Panthers this Sunday. We got a whole bunch of things to talk to you guys about today. And the free stretch, as always, brought to you by Bill Curry Ford, where right now, Tampa's first family of Ford is proud to announce a nationwide lifetime warranty on new and pre-owned vehicles, including unlimited years, unlimited miles. You get a 10-year roadside assistance, and you get 1-year complimentary service. You just bring it over there. They'll park it in the bay. They'll take care of it. OneYou.com. And if you want to go see Sean Sullivan in person, he's the new general manager at Bill Curry Ford, you'll receive the Joe Bucks Fan discount. Just say Joe Bucks Fan, say free stretch, say Bobby Fenton, anything like that, you get the discount. It's just that simple. And that's on top of the already transparent online pricing and the new lifetime warranty. So, I mean, there aren't a lot of things you're going to be left wanting for if you go down there and want to get all your T's crossed and your I's dotted when you're buying a new car. Bill Curry Ford has been giving people great deals and taking care of this community for 58 years. 58 years, which is longer than most of us has been here. It's longer than I've been alive. They're just north of the stadium on Dale Mabry Highway. So you can go over there if you want to do that. Or like I said, go to the website, BillCurryFord.com. It's C-U-R-R-I-E in Curry, BillCurryFord.com. And thanks to them. As always, we are recording on a Thursday morning from the driver's seat of my Ford Explorer, in my garage. And it's actually pretty nice in here today, given the way the weather's been lately, so I'm pretty happy about things right now. Now, first thing I want to get to before we go any further, because I feel bad. I've never, ever wanted to be one of those people that says things and doesn't do them. You know, your word is your bond. I want to be not necessarily somebody everybody always likes or agrees with. I know I'm not that. But I want to at least be somebody where if something comes out of my mouth, you can take it to the bank. And 2 weeks ago on the show, I was just kind of talking out of my ass, to be quite honest, about, oh, Thanksgiving's coming up next week. Don't worry, we'll have a show. I said we were going to do a show, and I didn't do a show last week for Thanksgiving. I got busy. I had some family in town, of course. You know, I could have done one. I'm not going to lie to you. I could have done one. But I was like, ah, it's Thanksgiving. You know, I'll just do one next week. Took the week off, basically. And since I said I was going to do a show, that's BS, all right? I apologize to anybody out there. And I had a few of you. I was actually kind of flattered because I had a few of you who said, hey, Bobby, you said they were going to do a show this week. No show. So at least you actually listened to what I said and took stock in it. And I appreciate that. Unfortunately, that stock became worthless after I did not deliver on what I said I was going to do. So I can't go back in time and do a show for last week, but I apologize. One of the things I've prided myself on, going back to my radio career, when I was kind of the guy working my way up, you know, first I was the update guy, then got to co-host a show with former Buccaneer and Gator great Scott Brantley, then got my own show. I was always the guy that'd be in there, and I wouldn't necessarily do them on the big holidays, but on holidays when a lot of other people might be off, or if it was, you know, if I had a morning show on like 4th of July or something like that, I'd come in and knock that show out and still go on about my day. And I had people always tell me, hey, Bobby, I like how I can always count on you to be on the air, no matter what's going on. And so I let you guys down last week, and I apologize for that. But we're back this week as the Bucs get set to take on the Panthers at 4-7 now after a nice win over the 49ers, who aren't very good, admittedly, but that's the type of team that if you're a good team, you're supposed to beat the way the Bucs did. And they did. And I'm not saying the Bucs are a good team, but certainly they looked a lot better than they have, and the 49ers, for all their flaws, haven't been terrible on defense, and it was good to see Jameis Winston go out there and have a very clean game, and, you know, no turnovers, no fumbles, no close calls, really. Just got the job done, and the Bucs were in control from the get-go. So that's the kind of game Jameis Winston needs to be having more often, and I'll tell you what, that game illustrated, in my opinion, exactly how big the folly was of Dirk Koetter in taking him and putting him on the bench after the Cincinnati game. That was a very hasty decision. It was the wrong decision. It continues to be the wrong decision. I'm glad Jameis is back in now. I'm glad he's able to do all the things that we saw him do. But, you know, when I look back at the 2018 season however it ends, and I know, you know, now, no matter how bad things are, you win a game and everybody starts to say, well, you know, you're only two games behind the wild card, and maybe if you win it, I don't want to hear anything about that. If you're worth talking about for a playoff spot, you're 7-4 right now, not 4-7. So no, I'm tired of always getting behind and trying to figure out a way to claw back in. It ain't happening. But the point is, when I look back on this season, the defining story of it will be, one, Jameis Winston's own mistakes and, you know, resulting in his suspension to start the year. I mean, I'm not ever going to say it's not Jameis's fault. But two, the Buccaneers mishandling and basically just the planets aligning the wrong way for the Bucs. It's almost that Fitzmagic thing the first 3 weeks ended up being, in my opinion, a bad thing for the team because everybody got sucked in. Jameis came back, didn't start a game after he was eligible to start one, but even that wasn't a big deal. But then when he did get back, instead of saying, okay, this is our guy, which I've said over and over all the way back to the beginning of the year, let's get 12 games of data. Let's see what we got with Jameis Winston. Here's a chance for him to take a big step forward this year. Instead, we went helicopter parents on him. And every time he made a little mistake, oh, yoink, you're out. Fitz is in. Oh, Fitz sucks too. Yoink, you're out. Jameis, you're back in. And just absolute butchering of the situation. Should never have been done this way. And I didn't even mind him getting pulled in the Cincinnati game, like in the game against Cincinnati. Hey, you're having a bad day. The way you pull a goalie in the NHL or a pitcher. Okay, hey, we're going to go ahead and go with Fitz the rest of the day. But his ass should have been right back in the starting lineup the next week. And the way they waffled, and it was just desperation by Dirk Cutter. We've talked about it all already. I get it. But in the end, and the Bucs, by the way, went 0-3 in the games Fitzpatrick started in his second wave of starts after Dirk Cutter essentially annihilated any trust or confidence that there was between Dirk Cutter and Jameis Winston. And I'm not personally privy to their relationship. I'm not claiming to be. But I have a hard time believing you can do that to your quarterback and have everything be just okay, whatever. Now, it's not going to matter if the Bucs make the decision I think they should make, which is to move on from this coaching staff and not move on from this quarterback. Then we can get a new coaching staff. Hopefully it's somebody, you know, and obviously this would all be determined before a hire is made, but, you know, hopefully it's somebody who sees what I see and what a lot of us see in Jameis and who believes that he's the best option going forward for the team and wants to work with him and on and on and on. You know, he's 24. I mean, I say this over and over because it's easy to forget. He's 24. And a lot of times we forget that. And yet, watching him on Sunday, it's just one game. I mean, I'm not going to crucify him for one bad game, I'm not going to anoint him for one good game either. I'm being very reasonable here. But what I'm trying to say is, you got to roll with this stuff. And the Bucs are in a position where they can roll with it because, quite honestly, they're not playing for anything right now. At the end of the year, it'll all be a lot more clear than it is right now if you just let us get to the end of the year without, again, freaking out over every pick, every bad decision, this, that, and the other. So that was a good step forward on Sunday. Let's see what they can do against Carolina this Sunday. And in the meantime, looking at what happened in that game, I went to the game. I'm going to talk about that in a minute. But we had, other than a few missed connections, if you will, with DeSean Jackson, and they were certainly not all DeSean Jackson's fault. But other than that, it was a pretty clean game. Now, the whole DeSean Jackson thing, you know, he's still unhappy, and I can understand that. This isn't what he signed up for, both in the win-loss column and his own personal role. For whatever reason, it doesn't seem to work real well between Jameis and him, the way it does between Jameis and Mike Evans. There were a few routes. I mean, I was there at the game. And I was actually sitting. I mean, I had a good view of a couple of them. You know, there was a one deep post route where DeSean Jackson got free after his cut. He's running diagonally toward the right front pylon, open as can be. If Jameis throws him open and leads him toward that pylon, it's a touchdown. Instead, Jameis throws the ball vertically up the hash marks, which is not the angle DeSean Jackson was running. And it turns into an overthrow. And you can see by Jackson's body language, he was pissed. He's like, yeah, same bleep, different day. And I get that. Listen, I you know, I listen to the commish. I listen to all our podcasts, but listen to the commish. I know what he thinks of DeSean Jackson. I don't necessarily disagree with him. Yet I understand from Jackson's standpoint, I mean, when you're a receiver, especially the type of receiver he is, and listen, every position in football is different. Receiver lends itself to a diva-type mindset because you can't influence the game every play. You just can't. You know, if you're the quarterback, obviously you're touching the ball every play. If you're a running back, you're going to get your 20, 15, whatever it is, touches per game. But when you're a pass catcher, if you have a good game, you're going to run 70 snaps a game, 75 snaps a game, whatever it is that an average NFL team runs. You're going to have a chance on maybe 10% of those plays to get the ball in your hands. And that's if you have a really good day. Like, oh, I had 8 catches today. That's a lot. That's a great day. And even that, you know, there's just so much that's out of your control. Like, you're not going to get fed over and over and over. First of all, you're not the only receiver. There's 3 or 4 of them, unlike running back where you're the, you know, the guy in there. And second of all, I mean, it's hard. You know, it's just hard to get more touches than that. So when it's not working out, when you're not getting the ball the way you think you should, when you can't really get on track with your quarterback, I understand the frustration. I really do. I'm not saying DeSean Jackson's all wrong. But my point is I don't care who's right or wrong, because at the end of the day, ultimately, Jameis Winston is way more important to this team than DeSean Jackson going forward. Okay? And so if it's not working out, it's not working out. You do the whole thing around Jameis, okay? You don't do the whole thing around other people. And so if it's not working out, it's not working out, and it's not working out. Which, again, may not even be anybody's fault. I mean, again, Jameis was to blame for a couple of those misconnections, from what I could see. But irrelevant. So, you know, he was a little bit unhappy about things, but I didn't think it was a big deal, considering they got the result they wanted. They got an 18-point win. You know, they did everything you'd asked to do. They were able to score when they needed to score, and it was really fun watching the offense move up and down the field for once without worrying about a devastating pick or a, you know, momentum-changing pick or anything like that. Kyle Shanahan, by the way, he recognizes, and this was a quote of his before the game Sunday from last week when they asked him about Jameis Winston. And, like, you know, he seems to get it. Of course, he's not the one whose job is on the line if Jameis doesn't perform the way Dirk Cutters was. But he said, quote, "Some of the plays he's made," talking about Jameis, "over his career are unbelievable. I know he's been rusty at times this year, which I guess all guys are when they can't practice or are out of the building for, I think, about a month is what it was." He talked about how Jameis made plays with his legs. And that was another thing I noticed on Sunday with the 49ers game was how good Jameis was keeping plays alive. This is one of the things I always liked about him. Moving outside the pocket, still keeping his eyes downfield and finding guys. So a couple other things from the game. Vita Vea influencing the game. Good to see. And it's almost, again, like he had been unable to practice and as a rookie to begin with and kind of young and just needed some time to settle in and still needs time to settle in. But we'll take the good things when we can get them. And that was a good performance by Vea this weekend. And then you had, if you look at the whole thing, going back to whatever it was it 2006 or 7, something like that? The whole double-digit sack drought finally broken. Jason Pierre-Paul ends up, and I was standing right there, and I knew when it happened. I saw him get the sack in the, I think it was the early second quarter. It might have been mid to late first quarter. He got the sack, and I was like, there it is! It's been over a decade! Nobody with double-digit sacks, and Jason Pierre-Paul got it done. And the Bucs had multiple sacks on the day, and it was good to see the pass rush get going. So, you know, great. Hey, you're supposed to beat the 49ers at home, especially in a 1 o'clock kickoff. West Coast teams in 1 o'clock kickoffs on the East Coast generally don't do well. That's not a hard and fast rule, but it is an historical trend, and I was glad to see that. It held up, so the Bucs did their job. Now, I went to the game, and I wanted to talk a little bit on the show today about my experience this week. It's my second game of the year, but this one was done totally from the standpoint of regular fan. I didn't have anybody hook me up with anything. I didn't have any tickets before the game, and I was at home. And this is one of the things I love about, first of all, Tampa in general, and second of all, living where I live. I only live about 3 miles from Raymond James Stadium. And obviously, the crowds aren't what they used to be, and I wish that was different. But you can say, hey, let's go to the game and go, And it doesn't have to turn into, like, if you're in New York and you're, oh, we're going to go to the Giants game today, that's like a 10-hour commitment. Like, you're really, you're getting up at, like, 8 or 9 that morning. You're getting out there, however the hell they get out there, the game, then getting home. I mean, it's a gigantic, you know, make advance plans, huge commitment. Here, it was 12:15 for a 1 o'clock kickoff. I'm at my house, haven't made any plans to go to the game. And my daughter's kind of acting up a little bit. She's 3. She's no, you know, she's out. Like, she needed a nap. She was just in no condition for anything. So I'm here with my 7.5-year-old son. Or actually, he's closer to 7. And I'm like, hey, Bubba. That's a nickname. I don't call him Bubba. I said, hey, you want to go to the Bucks game? And he was like, yeah, let's go to the Bucks game. I'm like, okay, let's get in the car. Now it's 12:30. Okay? I have a $20 bill in my wallet. That's it. It's 12:30. I said, let's go. I went to my wife and said, hey, can I get a $10 bill from you? I think that'll be, or whatever you have in your wallet. Do you have anything, you know, besides a couple of ones? And she's like, I got a 10 and a 5 right here. So I said, okay, give me those. Now I got $35 in my wallet, and now I don't need to go to the ATM. So I go to the game. For all you people that say, and they come out with these studies all the time, oh my God, a family of 4, it costs $400 to take a family of 4 to go to the game. And they say, well, if you buy tickets and then you get parking and then you buy each person a hot dog and a Coke and a program and a team hat, you know, they factor in all this crap that you actually would never have to buy just to go to a game. If you do it Bobby Fenton style, let me tell you, it ain't that bad. So I get in the car, $35 in my wallet, right? I go straight up Himes from South Tampa. Takes me about 12 minutes. I go into the old neighborhood there. Best place to park if you want to go to a Bucks game and you don't, if you're going to tailgate in the main stadium lots where there's grass and all that, that's one thing if you have a parking pass. But if you're just looking to park your car, again, a little bit east of Himes, but west of MacDill, that little neighborhood back in there, there's all these streets. There's Braddock, there's Leroy, there's Dewey. Lincoln's one of the north-south streets through there. It's just an, you know, old West Tampa neighborhood. I love it back there because I'm an old-school Tampa guy, and that's old-school Tampa. You can find any number of houses. There's literally over 100 houses that will park your car. Depending on how close to Himes you want to get, you can go $20, $25, get a block further. Now it's $10. Get a few blocks further, it's $5, and that's what I did. It was about, at this point, like 5 minutes to kick off. By the time I got my son in the car and drove over there. And I parked my car for $5 two blocks from Himes. Literally about 500 yards from the stadium for $5. All right, so don't give me that crap you had to pay $40 for parking. You can do that, but you don't have to. A nice couple parked at their house. So I give them the $5. Now I got $30 in my wallet. Well, hey, it's 5 minutes till kickoff. I don't have any tickets. Let's get some tickets. I throw two fingers up in the air. So I'm walking north on Himes toward the stadium, coming up around the corner of Himes and Tampa Bay there. And there's a bunch of scalpers and stuff. And again, now the game has started. And, you know, just for me walking around, we're like 10 minutes to go in the first quarter. And a few scalpers are like, hey, man, what do you want to spend? I'm like, well, probably about $30. He's like, oh, 30 each. He's like, no, I'll do 50 each, 100. I'm like, no, 30 total. I'll do 15 each. And they laughed at me. And I'm like, dude, there's 10 minutes to go on the first day. The game's already started. And there's nobody else out there looking for tickets. It's not like these guys had all these people yelling at them, hey, I'll take them. You know, you can take the tickets and eat them, or you can take my $30. They didn't want to do it. Fine. I don't like buying from scalpers anyway. I like buying from regular people who just happen to have extras. And I'm willing to wait. You know, it's a 3-hour game. I don't mind getting in there a little bit later, halfway through the first quarter, if I'm going to get a better deal, but I'm not paying $100 for two tickets to a game where I can probably go sit anywhere I want anyway. More on that in a little while. So I got the two fingers in the air after I turned down a few scalpers who seemed a lot more desperate than they wanted to let on. This guy comes up to me and says, hey, you need two? I'm like, yeah. He's like, here, I got two right here. I'm like, okay, well, dude, I'm just looking for get-ins. I'm not looking to pay big money. He whips them out. He's like, all right, these are upper level. Here you go. I'm like, okay, cool. How much? He's like, no, just take them. I'm like, seriously? He's like, yeah, just take him. We had two people didn't show up. Exact same kind of thing I would have done if it was me, because I'm not looking to, you know, I have extra tickets, unless I paid a lot for them. I'm not going to ring people up. And this guy was like, No, just take them. I'm like, really? So I said, hey, man, let me at least buy you a beer or something. Here's a $10 bill. I gave him the $10 bill. He didn't want it. He would have not taken it. I could have had him for free. But I said, I feel bad. Let me give you $10. So I give him the $10. Price tag for the day now is $15 so far, okay? $15. So then I get in the stadium. The seats were in the upper deck, which I didn't even bother with at the time. I just went and sat in the end zone, which I like the end zone view. And I actually, if it was up to me, I always stand. You know how they have those railings on either side in the end zone, one in front of the pirate ship and on the other side too? That's my favorite place because I don't like to sit in a seat for games. I like to stand up and just watch and kind of lean on something. I've never liked to sit down in a seat. It just doesn't feel right watching a football game like that. So if it was up to me, and I did this for the first few minutes, I go to those railings. There's always a spot you can find. It might be too deep, but I'm, you know, taller than the people in front of me, and I can watch the game. So I did that for a while, but my 7-year-old was kind of like, Dad, can we sit down? And you want to make it a good experience for the kid because you want them to remember it and you want them to want to come back. So you don't want to just brutalize them and say, no, we're standing for 3 hours. If he can't handle that, fine. So I got some seats in the end zone because there was, again, just long blocks of empty seats followed by blocks of people occupying seats followed by more. There was plenty to choose from without having to worry about, oh, I'm in someone's seat. So I went in the end zone for a little while. Did that whole thing, great view of the game. Then my son looks up at the upper deck and he says, hey, I want to go up there. I'm curious. So I was like, okay, where do you want to go? He's like, I want to go to the very last row of the whole stadium. And I said, okay, let's go up there. You know, and it was wide open up there. So I walk up to the west side, right by that little tiny press box where they used to film. It's not the actual press box, but the very top middle of the stadium. I go up and sit in the very last row, actually sit next to one of the flagpoles they raise the flags on when the Bucks get in the red zone. And that was cool because my son, the guy that was doing that flag, saw my son. He's like, hey, you want to raise the flags? And I was like, oh, man, buddy, I've never gotten to raise the flags, man. You want to do it? He's like, yeah, I want to do it. So he got to raise the flags when the Bucks got in the red zone or when they scored. It was great. So we sat up there for a while. And Raymond James is a good stadium in that if you're in the very last row, you don't feel like you're very high up. You've got a great view of the field. You don't feel like some stadiums, you feel like you could reach out and touch the moon if you're in the last row. And Raymond James is not like that. It's a pretty good view from the top middle. Yeah, the Swamp is like that too in Gainesville. Their last row isn't very high up at all. And I've always liked that. And they don't even have decks at the Swamp. But Raymond James, even with an upper deck, is not very high up. They cantilevered it very well. So we watched up there for a while. And then toward the end of the game, with about 8 minutes to go, I said, okay, now I want to give him a little taste of it. I want to let him hear some pads clicking. Let's go down like 10 rows up. And again, plenty of room. So we go down to the 50-yard line, like right behind the Bucks bench, sat in some seats there. He got a pretzel for $5. And he got a foot-long hot dog for $9.50. So that's $14.50 on top of the $15 I already spent. And I never buy food at games myself because the prices are so ridiculous. But I'm not going to, you know, for kids, again, you got to make them happy. You want to make sure they enjoy the experience. So for him, I sprung. And then somebody gave us a free cheeseburger when they were closing the concession stand up. So we got all that stuff. So total price tag for a day at the Bucks game with my son, parking, tickets, food, sitting on all three levels of the stadium at one point, okay? $29.50. I got the extra 50 cents right here in my center console in my Ford Explorer still. And I'm not like a cheapo or anything. I mean, I kind of am, but my point is it would have been fine if it was 50 or 60 or 70, but the whole day costs $30 to go see the Bucks. And that's the way it should be right now. Now, if they're in a playoff race, the place would be jam-packed, then the number goes up, and that's fine too. I used to have season tickets for just that reason, and I may get them again one day. But if you're at home, especially if you have kids, I mean, if you don't have kids, maybe it's different, but especially if you have kids, and on Sunday this week you're thinking, you know what, let me go to the Bucks game. You can do it. Like, it's really easy to do. And you may not like walking around with your fingers in the air to buy tickets. It took me about 10 minutes. It wasn't that big of a deal. But some people don't like to do that. They like to have their tickets. You can do that too. I mean, you could go on the Bucks website, or go up to the box office for that matter and buy the face value if you want to do that. Or StubHub or something like that, whatever it is. You know, there's plenty of ways. If you want to get your tickets in advance, you can do that. And you still won't spend more than $100 for the whole day if you don't want to. Now, if you're one of those people that can't go to the game without buying six beers for $8 or $10 each, and then you got to have this, that, and the, then yeah, the number starts going up. But don't let anybody tell you, oh my God, it costs $200 or $300 to bring your family to the game. Not if you're low maintenance. If you're high maintenance, it does. If you're low maintenance, yeah, my son said, I'm thirsty. You know what we did? I said, okay, let's get up. They got water fountains all around all the concourses at Raymond James. Drink the water. You don't have to buy a soda for $7. One, it's ridiculously priced. And two, it's not good for you. Or buy one water if you want to refill the bottle at the water fountain, because that was one thing that would have been nice, maybe to have a bottle to take the water back to the seat. But either way, we just loaded up on water at the water fountains whenever we saw one, and we were fine. So I'm not telling you how to live your life. I'm just saying if you're one of those people that thinks you can't do that, can't do the game, it's too much of a commitment, it's really not. I left my house at 12:30. I was in my living room after the game, and getting out was no problem. I was in my living room again by 4:30, okay? So it was under a half hour from the final gun of the game to me walking to my car and driving home. 4 hours of my day, and I was back, still in time for dinner, still had time all morning to do whatever I wanted. You can't beat it. You can't beat it. Now, the game experience. Let me talk about that for a minute, because I did have a little bit of a problem, and the only issue I had was with the way the Bucks do their sound. Because again, I've bitched about this on my shows in the past, whether it was Lightning games or Buck games, or on this podcast and other instances. You know, I'm not going to go on a whole tangent again. I've done it before, but I will say this. I don't know where our society or how our society has gotten to the point where we feel like we can't have any idle time that isn't filled up by noise. But apparently, culturally, that's where we're at right now. Hey, unoccupied time, let's play, even if it's like a 6 second snippet, let's play some death rap metal rock music and just go, and then cut it off right when the ball's put in play. I mean, they milk every millisecond out of it. Why? That was my only thing. And I guess it's worse if you're sitting near a speaker. And when the portion of the game I was talking about where we went to the upper deck seat and was like literally in the last row, the light towers that hang over actually have speakers hanging off of them pointed back toward. So if you're in like the final 10 or so or 5 or 10 rows of the upper deck, you've actually got a speaker pointing right at you, where if you're lower down in the lower deck, it's not quite as bad, although it's still very loud. And literally between like a play ends, okay? You don't have to play any music for those 15 seconds until the next play starts. You really don't. Like, I don't know how bad our ADD has gotten collectively, but this assumption by game day staffs and, you know, the Buck Vision or whoever the hell's in charge of the music and the loudspeakers at a Bucks game, I have no idea who it is. I wish I could talk to them. But this assumption on their part that, hey, we have to entertain people even when the game's not going on, and they're not going to have fun at this game if we don't play 15 seconds of Rocket Like a Hurricane in between plays. And I mean, literally, the guy, like, there'd be a tackle, whistle blows, literally, right then and there, before you could even gather your thoughts. And then, like, they're lining up, they're breaking the huddle, they're still playing it, and then right when the ball snapped, they'd stop the music. It's like, dude, just let the game play. I get for a TV timeout for a couple minutes, you want to do your, you know, whatever the hell, we're going to hide, a salami underneath a helmet or something, and the three helmets are going to shuffle around. Fine, whatever, But between plays, like literally every unoccupied second of time, you have to be audibly assaulted. And it's so, of course, it's way too loud. Cause it's always, maybe when it's sold out, maybe they have the volume calibrated for a 65,000 seat crowd where there's more of a din. But when there's whatever it was, 40,000 or 50,000, it resonates a lot more, okay? And it was a bit much. So I know that's probably not changing, but if it was up to me, I mean, it added nothing to the game day experience at all. It's not even like they play, like, you know, popular music or, you know, some stuff that people, you know, okay. In the 80s and 90s, they would do that. Now, it's like a mix between metal and rap. Like, it's not rap in the traditional sense, but it's like heavy metal with a rap. I guess it's supposed to be intimidating or something, or fire people up, but all it did was just make my brain liquefy for a couple hours there on Sunday. And so that part, yeah, I was relieved when the game ended. But it's still a good experience. And I'll tell you what, you know, I always watch these games on TV when I'm not there, and it seems like so down, like, oh man, the atmosphere looks really, really staid today. It's really just blah. There's only a few thousand people. But when you're at the game, there's something about the energy of being there. Even when you're at the game on a day when the crowd is what it was on Sunday, it still felt like it had energy. Like when the Bucks would score, when a third down would come up or something, and everybody would start making noise. I still felt it. Like, I felt it. And that doesn't translate on TV unless it's a sellout crowd. And, you know, it is what it is. I mean, you can't complain about it if you're the Bucks. If you're 7-4 going into that game on Sunday instead of 4-7, or now they were 3-7 at the time. But if you were 7-3, I guarantee you there'd be 70,000 people there screaming their heads. I remember I was at literally 100 games in a row from 1996 all the way through something like 2010. All right? So that's what it would be like. Jason Pierre-Paul gets it. He was asked about the crowd after the game. He said, quote, "You got to understand the fans, too. You know, he said, quote, "They're tired of losing. If I look at it from a fan's point of view, I'd be pissed off, too." And this is what he said, you know, just regarding the start they had. Obviously, nobody was pissed off about the game on Sunday. But yeah, I mean, you know, when you don't play important games in December, you won't get energetic crowds in December or November. "I long for the day." And we kind of had a snippet of it a couple years ago when they missed the playoffs at 9-7. But I long for the days, again, that we had where, you know, the Bucks would be 8-3 right now. Big game against Carolina. Hey, we're two games behind the Saints. We still have one more game with them and the tiebreaker. We can catch them and win the South. But if not, we're definitely in position for the wild card. You know, there's a lot riding on this game. There's nothing riding on this game on Sunday besides future considerations for people like Jameis Winston and things like that. Dirk Cutter, of course, his job is riding on it. But I think that ship's already sailed, personally. Or at least I hope it has. So people want stakes. I mean, that's the biggest thing. You say, oh, what makes people go to games? It's not HD TV at home that's gotten better and that's why people don't want to go. It's not smartphones. It's not the line to the bathroom. People put up with all that stuff if the game has stakes. If the Bucks were playing for an NFC South division title, or if they were hosting a playoff game, do you think a playoff game would not sell out because, oh, the lines are too long or it's too crowded, I'd rather be in my living room? No, you'd get every single damn seat in that whole place would be filled for a playoff game. It will be again. And have times changed? Absolutely. I mean, things are different now. There's no question. Not just with the Bucks, but with everybody. It's happening across all sports and across all teams in the NFL, college, otherwise, in football. There's been a downtick in stuff, but the big boys are still the big boys. And when the big boys are in playoff contention, those teams' fans are there. And they will be. And same here. We will be again. But it was a great time on Sunday. I really had a fun time. My son, it was his second game ever. And he's 2-0 now. And I have so many memories of when I was a kid. I've talked about it on last week's show how, you know, when I was a kid, I didn't know any better. I didn't care about the team's record. I just wanted the Bucks to win. I'd get so excited about it. And that's where he's at now. And I'm trying not to jade him because he asked me about, you know, where are the Bucks in the standings? And I show him the standings on my phone. Now they're 3-7, you know. And he's like, oh, so they can't really make the playoffs? I'm like, no, they're not going to the playoffs. But I don't want him to even play that up. Just, hey, go Bucks. Let's watch the game. Let's win. And I'm not worried about the draft and all that stuff. You know, I'm not going to root for them to lose and things like that. I may not be too upset about it if they do, but I'm not going to actively root for it either. So, in any event, I haven't given my email address out, but if you wanted to comment in any way, always, always, you'll get responded to. It may take a while. Not because I have so many emails, but just because I procrastinate. The email address is bobbygameday@yahoo.com, bobbygameday@yahoo.com. On Twitter, it's @bobbygameday. You can always catch me there, and I will respond to you. Love hearing from you guys. Had a lot of fun this week with both the holiday before that and then going to the 49ers game, so we'll see what happens with Carolina. But looking ahead to that game, and Carolina coming in with a string of losses themselves, they're hanging on to contention. So this is a big game for them, much bigger than it is for the Bucks. But our ace in the hole, Bucks are wearing the Color Rush uniforms. Yeah, I didn't mention this yet. First of all, the Color Rush uniforms are, hey, I could care less. The Bucks have hideous uniforms. The Color Rush uniforms are better than their usual uniforms, but only by comparison to those uniforms. The Color Rush uniforms are not good, make no mistake. But compared to what they usually wear, they're much better. It was refreshing for me to see last week in the Tampa Bay Times. Not just an article written by one of the writers, but an actual editorial, uncredited editorial. So this is the paper speaking, not just any one person. And they actually took time. I consider this the most important piece of journalism the Times has done in the past 5 years, and I say that without hyperbole. Big column, front page of the sports page, about how the Bucks must change their uniforms, how they're an embarrassment, on and on and on. And I read the whole thing with like a huge grin on my face and like my tongue out, like panting and nodding, like almost like moving my lips while I was reading the words, just kind of really savoring to see it journalistically put out there, not just people like me yelling and screaming about it, but to see it on the record. And so a lot of people will say, I can almost hear you saying it right now, I don't care about the uniforms. This is why the Bucks are terrible. We're 4-7. Our franchise is a mess. And you're worried about uniforms. You need to worry about winning games. Yeah, shut up if you're saying that. All right? Shut up. I don't know if you know this. Maybe you don't. I'm not an expert on how NFL teams run. But I do know this. I know enough about this. There is not some finite amount of capital you have to be able to spend on your team outside the salary cap as far as doing things to improve your franchise, okay? So if you say, hey, let's fix the uniforms, you don't lose the ability to go scouting. Like the scouts and the people that would do the uniforms, those are separate people. So I don't know if you realize this. All the people that say, oh, why are we even worried about this? We got to worry about all this other stuff. We got people, we got to go get some scouts and drafts. And all the uniforms don't affect any of that, okay? Like, you're not taking something away from scouting and drafting and player evaluation in order to fix the uniforms. They're not related to each other, okay? It's not a big deal. You can do both. And certainly we need to fix things in the player evaluation, in the roster department and all that stuff. But it doesn't mean, oh, until that gets fixed, that's the only thing we're worried about. Because here's how it works. If you suck, people say, oh, well, who cares about our uniforms? We suck. And if you're good, people say, oh, well, who cares because we're good. Exactly. It doesn't matter if you're good or bad. It has nothing to do with uniforms. I've never been one of those people that cares if a team wins or loses in a certain uniform. Oh, let's wear that again. We won. Or let's not wear that again. We lost. I want to look like a first-class organization, not an arena league team. And this embarrassment has gone on long enough, and even Martin Fennelly weighed in on it on Monday in his post-game little bullet point thing. I was glad to see that, too. I think the tide is shifting. Of course, the Joes have been on this bandwagon for a while, and they support me, and I support them when it comes to it. I'm not saying they're going to change their uniforms next year, because they're not, but I think in the next few years, we can finally put this whole thing behind us. And God, I hope we do, because it's an absolute joke. And it sears my retinas every single Sunday. But the color rushes are what they'll be wearing this weekend for those of you that are actually interested in that sort of thing. Again, email me, BobbyGameDay@Yahoo.com is the email address. On Twitter, you can follow me at BobbyGameDay. In the meantime, it's going to be a fun one this week. I will be out of town, so I won't be at the stadium, but I will be watching as always. And there are, you know what I love about it now? This is part of the good things about modern times and the smartphones and all that. Like, I don't have to worry about, oh, the Bucks game won't be on here. I just stream it on my phone. And for those of you that are like, well, how do you stream Buck or any game on your phone in the NFL? If you go to Reddit, R-E-D-D-I-T, if you just Google Reddit NFL streams, they have a whole bulletin board just dedicated every week to giving you a link to stream each game played in the NFL, regardless of what market you're in. So I can watch the Bucks on my phone if I have to, but I'll probably go to a sports bar or something too, because that's more fun and, you know, get the big screen going. But either way, I will be watching. As always, I consider the most important thing to be the development of Jameis Winston right now, and we'll see if that development continues in a positive way on Sunday. And until then, thanks to the Joes for getting this podcast on the air and allowing me the opportunity to present myself in front of all of you on the best website for Bucks coverage, joebucksfan.com. Thanks to all of you for listening. And I'll be back next week. Again, I apologize for not doing a show on Thanksgiving. No excuse, I should have done one. But until next Thursday, wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.